This is part six in a six-part series all about rethinking teaching practices, specifically practices that English teachers implement, thinking about them with equity at the forefront of our minds. The other parts are really, really important, and I highly recommend that you go back and listen to them. Part one was all about rethinking writing workshop with equity in mind. Part two was all about rethinking reading workshop. Part three was all about rethinking conferencing with equity in mind. Part four, rethinking unit design with equity in mind. Part five was all about rethinking writing assessment with equity in mind. And this part, the last part, is probably the hardest one that I've had to write. And actually, this is the second time that I've recorded this episode, honestly, because I had to go back and reread and revise and change a lot. This was a very, very, very hard episode to record and to plan for and to write about. And it's taken lots and lots of research and reflection and revision. And I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're listening. I think you're going to really get a lot out of it. I wrote this six-part series to better understand the inequities surrounding the ways in which we teach and assess reading and writing skills in the United States. I wanted to know more. Not only that, I wanted to find practical solutions for the problems that English teachers and all teachers really face, such as a lack of understanding about how to teach reading and writing effectively and with equity in mind. Just the immense challenge of helping 30 plus students with many differing needs. Students that receive low grades again and again all year long. And systemic racism and how all of that plays out within our educational institutions and within our classrooms. After writing this six-part series, I've discovered that these topics are really difficult to understand. And there's a lot of controversy and many historically significant events that have had massive ripple effects. I highly recommend you go and visit this blog post on amandarightnow.com. Just click blog. And, or you could search equity or equity in reading on my website. And I have a couple of infographics for you to view. One of them is a very quick overview of the history of the reading wars. And I think that you're going to learn a lot today in this episode all about the reading wars. So definitely go view that infographic and go view this blog post because I really think it's helpful and I think that teachers need to be informed about these topics. My hope is that by synthesizing all of this information, I can help you and other busy teachers make informed decisions in their classrooms when it comes to choosing the most impactful and equitable ways to teach. Through my research, I've come to also understand that teachers have immense power. We have the ability to face the inequities within our school systems head on with the choices that we make in our classrooms. So let's get started. Welcome to the Workshop Teacher Podcast, a podcast for teachers who are interested in trying workshop in their classrooms and teachers who are obsessed with it, like me. Before we get too deep into the topic of teaching and assessing reading, we need to be on the same page when it comes to some key terms related to this topic. The first term, workshop. What is workshop? Workshop is, this is my definition, a method of teaching that empowers students to become readers and writers in and outside of the classroom. This method of teaching involves a system wherein students work toward publishing pieces of writing and developing identities as readers by choosing books they're interested in. Workshop also prioritizes a supportive community of readers and writers. What's equity? Equity is the act of treating people fairly. This is not to be confused with equality, which is treating people equally. Our students are all unique and have different needs, so treating them all equally is not really possible. But treating them fairly and with their individual needs in mind is possible. And, you know, I say it's not possible, but I mean, really, I think a lot of us do try and treat our students equally. And I think what I mean by it's not possible is like if you literally were treating every student equally, you would be like a robot. So it's just not possible. Okay, what about the reading wars and the literacy wars, or the literacy wars? They go by both terms. This is the debate about how to teach reading. The science of reading camp, the whole language camp, and the balanced literacy camps. They don't actually have camps, but I'm just calling them like the groups of people that that believe in these different theories of teaching reading, all are different, are on different kind of opposing sides or camps. They're all at odds with one another. So what is whole language? Well, whole language is a philosophy of teaching that is all about how young children learn to read naturally over time with exposure to relevant and engaging print. It's very student-centered, learner-centered, and the teacher is more of a co-learner alongside the student. What is the science of reading? Well, this is based on research that's been done by all sorts of different people, educational theorists, cognitive scientists, and this is all about how there is a systematic, predictable process that we can use to teach children to read that prioritizes phonics instruction, especially in the K through second grade classroom. What about balanced literacy? What's that? Well, it's an approach that prioritizes independent reading time, leveled readers, and most recently, Lucy Calkins is the main proponent of the balanced literacy approach. And she's been in a lot of, you know, hot water because her units of study program, which could be categorized under the balanced literacy approach, it's supposed to be balanced, right? It's supposed to cover all areas of reading instruction, including phonics, but it doesn't. When you really like look at it closely, there's a lot of use of something called the three cueing system, which is basically telling kids to use context clues while they read to figure out words rather than actual like letter sounds and things like that. And so Workshop is kind of, it's definitely a Lucy Calkins thing, and it falls under balanced literacy. So next, I want to talk about the reading opportunity gap. So many students in our schools receive fragmented learning experiences because of this reading wars situation. And this is causing a gap in students' reading skills. And this is really arguing that there is a reading gap, not because of students and their what they're bringing to the classroom from home and like they're if they're impoverished, that actually the gap is caused by the instruction they're getting in our classrooms. And I have links to different resources that I found really helpful, different articles in this blog post. You can definitely go check those out and read more about this, because honestly, I still feel like I have a lot to learn about all of these topics. And I just, yeah, there's still so much to know and learn. So if you want to go do your own investigating, please do. All right, now three more things we need to understand before I can move on here. Assessment. What is assessment? Well, it's collecting data and making decisions about that data to either improve learning experiences, so that's like formative assessments, or to evaluate learning, and that's more of the summative assessments. Okay, now, last but not least, the last five things we need to know about are the five reading skills that everyone agrees that students need in order to read successfully. So those five categories are, and you're probably aware of this, phonological awareness, so being able to identify words that rhyme, recognizing alliteration, recognizing syllables, counting out syllables, segmenting a sentence into actual words. So that's number one. Number two, phonics, so the systematic instruction in letter sound correspondence in order to decode the letter sounds to be able to read words and sentences. So that's number two. Number three is fluency, being able to read aloud and focus on pace, phrasing, punctuation, and intonation. Number four is vocabulary, understanding of words and their meanings. And number five is comprehension, understanding what someone is reading, and being able to summarize, connect with it, make predictions about it, things like that. So those are the five big areas of what humans need to be able to read. Now that we're clear on the key terms and just the background information about teaching and assessing reading, let's get to the problems and my proposed solutions. So the first problem that I want to talk about is the reading wars. The reading wars, and I put this in quotes because it's not really a war, are being battled, that's in quotes, across America, and have been going on since the 20th century. Some might even argue since the 19th century. These quote-unquote wars are really just a heated debate about how to teach reading to K through 2 students. But the history behind the reading wars has had tremendous ripple effects for upper elementary and secondary teachers, as well as teachers in other subject areas, because literacy is embedded in all subject areas, right? So if you feel a little bit out of the loop, I'm going to just give you a quick summation of what the reading literacy wars are all about. Okay, and I've already kind of gone over this a little bit, but let me just make sure we're clear. So the Science of Reading camp says it's essential that students get daily explicit phonics instruction in K through 2 classrooms. If students don't get this instruction, many of them will not learn to read at the level of their peers. They say, yes, lots of students do learn to read naturally, as the whole language theorists say, and they pick it up easily. My daughter, for example, I don't know how she learned to read. She just did. And I'm sure a lot of you can relate. But lots of kids don't. And what happens to those students who never get the explicit phonics instruction that they need? They move up to grade levels where teachers are focusing on more advanced reading skills, and with teachers who aren't trained in how to teach reading explicitly with phonics instruction. Whole language advocates believe that students need to be exposed to engaging texts and relevant purposes for reading, and a community of avid readers in order to develop as successful readers. Phonics is usually not a big priority in whole language classrooms. Balanced literacy proponents seem to take a more quote-unquote balanced approach, hence the name. This camp says they integrate all facets of reading. However, when the Science of Reading folks and others look at the balanced literacy curricula, the Units of Study by Lucy Calkins, they've seen and pointed out that it isn't as balanced as it purports to be. Science of Reading supporters say this Units of Studies actually units of study actually circumnavigates direct phonics instruction by using the three cueing method. The three cueing method involves using clues, pictures, other words on the page, and background knowledge to read challenging words rather than looking directly at the letters in the word and applying phonics skills to decode the word. But maybe you are wondering, why do secondary teachers need to pay attention to what's being debated in elementary classrooms? Shouldn't kindergarten, first, and second grade teachers be the ones responsible for the foundational reading skills like phonics? Why should secondary teachers have to deal with phonics? The short answer is that many of our students get to us without the skills. And so we need to pivot. We need to remediate and provide what our students come to us needing. If students don't know how to read or are struggling in their reading skills, it's absolutely unfair and inequitable to give these students D's and F's all year long on the assessments we are administering. So with all this disagreement, what in the world is an elementary and secondary teacher to do? Well, I have some ideas for you. So here are some possible solutions that you might consider. These are just one teacher's opinions. Okay, so the first possible solution that I have, and you're already on your way to implementing this solution by just being here listening to this episode or reading this blog post. Be aware of all areas of reading instruction. When it comes to teaching reading in the secondary classroom, assumptions about students abound. The first assumption usually made is that students should have learned to read already. But the fact is that in every single middle and high school classroom, there are students struggling mightily with reading and writing. Elementary and secondary teachers who want to close the reading opportunity gap need to be aware of all areas of reading instruction: phonological awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension. In secondary classrooms, we tend to focus all our attention on higher level reading analytical skills and stuff that has to do with comprehension and maybe vocabulary. We have students doing close reading and writing and about reading and discussing reading. These are all great, but we have to face the fact that many of our students need practice with fluency and phonics too. Elementary teachers often use a combination of whole class instruction and centers to focus on phonics and fluency. But how can secondary teachers or upper elementary teachers make time to focus on phonics and fluency, especially if our students need that? Well, let's move on to possible solutions number 2 and 3 for the answer to that question. Okay, and I've said this over and over and over again in many, many blog posts, many, many episodes. Possible solution number 2, read challenging texts aloud. Even with this awareness that many of our students can't read, what often happens in secondary classrooms is that phonological awareness is not given the time of day because it's assumed students already have that skill. But students' low reading levels and comprehension assessments prove otherwise. Students aren't given enough opportunities in the majority of secondary classrooms to practice fluency. They aren't reading aloud or listening to their peers or their teacher read aloud. They may be exposed to challenging texts with tier 3 words, and tier 3 words are words that are very content specific, but they're being expected to read and understand these words independently because there's so much independent reading that's happening in secondary classrooms and they don't have support from their teacher with this independent reading. The really terrible thing is that reading aloud to students and analyzing texts for extended periods of time could almost be considered taboo in secondary classrooms. But the thing is, reading aloud to secondary students is an easy and effective way to cover both phonics and fluency. A teacher might encounter a really challenging word while they're reading aloud, and talk with students about strategies for figuring out how to say the word and read it out loud. This opportunity is lost in many secondary classrooms because teachers assume students don't need this kind of instruction, but they're wrong. Many students would greatly benefit from teachers reading aloud and talking through challenging text and explaining Tier 3 vocabulary to their students. It's important to note, however, that I'm not suggesting that you read an entire novel out loud. That's not what I'm recommending. But what I am recommending is that you should be reading the most important scenes, the ones that students will take assessments on in your whole class novel. Those should be read aloud and analyzed and discussed with students. So the scenes you're testing on, or the challenging parts, the parts that may be a little bit confusing for students, those parts, read them aloud. Okay, the third solution that I have is, so the first one was be aware of all areas of reading instruction. The second one was read challenging texts aloud. And the third solution I have is facilitate regular conferences with your struggling readers. In part three of this series, I discussed a new approach to conferencing with individual students. In a nutshell, I proposed we stop trying to give every student an equal amount of our time in conferences. We can't deny the fact that some students need a lot more help and time with us than others. Equity is all about giving students what they need, not about giving them all the same thing. So, identify those students who struggle with reading early in the year. Work with them more, one-on-one or in small groups. This is where the workshop model and centers can be really powerful tools for secondary teachers. The workshop model is part of the balanced literacy approach in Lucy Calkins's units of study. It's important to note that the balanced literacy approach is currently being questioned right now by many, many people. And I actually linked a really interesting article from the New Yorker about this topic, and it was just published like September 1st, 2022. And it talked about how the units of study is actually being abandoned by many schools and districts. But I want to say right here, loud and clear, that I still think the workshop model has a place in our classrooms. Maybe not every day, maybe once a week, twice a week. I think that we really need to not throw the baby out with the bathwater here. I still think it can be really an effective method because it allows teachers to conference with struggling readers and writers. And when implemented effectively, it can really, really, and I've seen this happen in my 14 years as a teacher. It increases student engagement and motivation when they feel like they are given choices and they're listened to. And also, teachers, like during the writing work time of workshop or the reading time of workshop, teachers can give scaffolds to certain students. They can give tools. They can differentiate during that work time portion of workshop. So I still think that workshop is a valid method for teaching. But what kinds of things can you do to support these struggling readers during conferences with them? You may be wondering. The most simple and easy thing you can do is to read with them. It's not that complicated. Have them read to you. We're talking fluency here, right? Phonics, have them read to you, read to them, help them with it, what they need support with in that moment. Maybe you're thinking, this is going to be really embarrassing for certain students all the time in a mainstream classroom to be reading with their teacher all the time. But it won't if you normalize these types of conferences. And students need to be well managed and engaged during that reading work time or that writing work time. And so I don't recommend you conference with any students until you know that your students are able to work independently and productively for, you know, a chunk of time, maybe 20 minutes, 15 minutes. It doesn't even have to be as long as what the balanced literacy people and the units of study people say. It can be however long your students can handle being independent. Okay, and I also have, you know, a link to another blog article all about how I teach whole class novels reading workshop style. So you can do both. And this article talks about how. All right, let's get to problem number two. So the first problem was the reading wars. And I have multiple solutions for that, right? That I've just gone over. And really, it's all about the five areas of reading and making time for those areas in our classrooms and really, you know, with struggling readers, going back to the phonics, going back to the fluency, going back to the vocabulary development, and not just focusing so much of your time on the higher order thinking, writing, comprehension skills. Okay, so problem number two is teacher training. Most secondary teachers weren't explicitly taught how to teach reading. I'll admit that I wasn't when I went through teaching school 15 years ago. Yet every single year, secondary teachers have students in their classrooms who barely know how to read. These students often don't even have an IEP or a 504 plan, and it's left to the teacher to figure it out. This is wrong, but it's the reality we all face. Some of our secondary students come to us barely able to read, and we assume that elementary teachers are the ones to blame. However, we've learned through the reading literacy wars that this is a complex issue, and it's not easily solved by choosing one method over others. Each method has its benefits and drawbacks. The bottom line is blaming one group or another, or one grade level or another, it does not solve the crux of the problem, which is our students are struggling to read and write. In addition, it's important to be aware that social studies and science is not being prioritized the way that reading and writing are in elementary classrooms. And I did teach elementary for 8 years, and I know this. And my daughter's in elementary school. Why? Because reading and writing test scores are so abysmal, and schools are choosing to cut these subjects in order to focus more on reading and writing. This is a problem because cognitive scientists and those who have studied the science of how people read have pointed out the importance of not only phonics, explicit phonics instruction, but also the importance of building background knowledge in order to increase comprehension. Okay, so to sum up the problem, many secondary teachers aren't aware that our students are lacking in both background knowledge and explicit phonics instruction. I know I wasn't. To make matters worse, we weren't even taught how to explicitly teach reading and phonics. If we were, we aren't sure how to find time to cover phonics and fluency when we have to focus on the more advanced reading skills like literary analysis. So, what are some possible solutions? The first is something that I think is really important, and I had to put it in here because we need to be aware of it. Possible solution number one, be aware of deficit mindset. I linked an article published by the Assessment and Curriculum Development, ASCD, and it's an important one to read because it talks about deficit mindset. And I actually have a quote I want to read to you that really gives you kind of the gist of the problem with deficit mindset. Here it is, quote, "There is danger in seeing struggling, special needs, or at-risk students as needing some sort of specialized and often watered down and segregated program. When day-to-day instruction in literacy is left to someone other than the general education teacher, the stage is set for exclusionary practices. With lower expectations and fewer opportunities, the cycle of exclusionary practices unwittingly becomes the cause of underachievement." End quote. So general education teachers need to realize and understand that inclusive, heterogeneous, regular classroom environments can be incredibly effective places to learn reading skills. Remediation can be done effectively in general education classrooms. So we need to be aware of that. So that's possible solution number one to teacher training. We need to know that this isn't the job of the elementary teachers, the K through two elementary teachers. This isn't the job of special education teachers. I mean, sometimes it is depending on the case by case situation, but we have responsibilities here too. All right, so next solution, ask for support. We know that general education classrooms can be effective places to support struggling readers and writers if done intentionally, thoughtfully, and tactfully. But many of us have no idea how to do this. It's important to speak up about our lack of knowledge when it comes to how to approach remedial reading instruction in our classrooms. If we speak up, maybe our administrators and district personnel will take notice. But admitting something like this as an English teacher is rough. Sharing articles and resources can help. I do have a list of all of the articles that I read and have also linked in this blog post that you can read too if you'd like and to share with your administrators to bring attention to this problem of teachers' lack of knowledge about how to remediate reading issues. Okay, solution number three, help students build their background knowledge. Cognitive scientists like Daniel Willingham have found through his research and their research that literacy is supported when students are exposed to lots of information to develop their background knowledge or schema. Willingham and other cognitive scientists have proclaimed that children in schools need to be exposed to lots of information in many areas related to our society, the world, science, and history in order to be successful readers. How can you do that? Well, read more nonfiction with your students. Bring in science and social studies topics, current events. Kelly Gallagher's article of the week, I linked it. It's free. It could be a wonderful place to start, you know, weekly nonfiction read alouds and discussions about those articles. Super simple way to implement, fluency and phonics instruction in your classroom and to also build that background knowledge. I think I'm on a mission to make reading aloud to our students less taboo, honestly. Okay, let's talk about assessments now. Problem number three is all about assessments, and it's that we have too many assessments and not enough remediation or not enough like, okay, what do we do about what we found from this assessment? Have you felt that as a teacher? You assess, but then you're just at a loss as to what to do to help these kids who are not successful on these assessments. All classroom teachers, no matter the grade, conduct many types of reading assessments. The assessment results help to monitor student progress, make lesson plan decisions, diagnose learning differences, and provide students with grades. I have a lot of experience with these reading assessments because I've taught grades 3rd through 8th. And I have a list of examples of types of assessments I've utilized in both elementary and secondary settings. There's a bunch of them, tons. So like in the elementary classroom, and the secondary classroom, there are universal screeners, right? So these are usually taken 3 times throughout the year, the beginning, the middle, and the end of the year to catch deficits in reading. My school, we did the STAR reading test, SRI. These are examples of universal screeners. In elementary classrooms, there's also sight word test, fluency assessments. Sometimes teachers are trained in keeping running records. There's comprehension assessments, you know, when they're reading like novels or even short stories. Sight word tests, spelling tests. There's so many spelling tests in elementary classrooms. Vocabulary tests, nonsense word assessments. And then in secondary classrooms, there's, of course, the universal screening assessments, but there's also reading quizzes, reading comprehension tests, literary essays, Socratic seminars, portfolios, things like that. So We know that reading encompasses the main categories of phonics, decoding, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension. So what specific skills do we seem to be assessing in the secondary classroom? Did you notice anything? Mostly, we're assessing comprehension and vocabulary and higher order thinking and discussion skills. But what if older students are struggling with phonics, decoding, and fluency? What then? Secondary students have a wide range of needs. Some need remedial phonics instruction. Some need fluency practice. Some need extra comprehension support. Most middle and secondary classrooms do not assess this wide range of areas when it comes to reading. It's assumed students don't need phonics, decoding, or fluency practice unless they're referred to the special education staff at the school, or they're going through an IEP process or a 504 process and qualify for support services. In addition to all of this, many middle and high school assessment tools assess comprehension and fluency rates, but these assessment tools don't provide support or next steps if a student does have low comprehension or fluency rates. All right, now I have a step-by-step plan for you. Here it is. Are you ready? So these are the possible solutions. First, these actually are meant to be in order. So the first step, the first solution step is identify your struggling readers and writers. You can determine which of your students is struggling with writing and reading in many ways. Here are a few ideas. Use your school's universal assessment software, universal screening software. You could also just observe students during independent reading time or independent writing time and write down what you observe them doing. You could have writing pre-assessments before starting a writing unit. You could have a reading pre-assessment with comprehension passages and open-ended questions after reading a short article or a short story. Then what you're going to do is you're going to write a list of the students that are struggling with reading on a piece of paper. And also you want to have another one for writing. And it's probably, there's a lot of crossover most likely. And you want to have this list with you at all times. It should be visible to you, but only accessible to you. It's important that this list always be at the top of your mind whenever planning new lessons, activities, and assessments. Okay, so that's number one. You need a list of those struggling readers and writers with you at all times, and it always needs to be at top of mind. Number two, locate extra assessment tools. Ask your SPED department for help. Once you determine which of your students is a struggling reader or a struggling writer, you're going to want to find out more about what's going on for them. Which of the five areas of reading, phonological awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension, are they struggling with most and why? It's important you get the opportunity to listen to these students read aloud to you, as well as talk with them about various texts. Your SPED department should be able to help you locate assessment tools that can help you determine your student's ability to decode words or sound words out. You can track their words read per minute and their accuracy. And SPED departments usually have these kinds of tools like in their filing cabinets, if not in your universal screening tool that your school provides. It may also be important to refer these students to your SPED department if they haven't already been referred for more in-depth assessment. Just be careful of the deficit mindset that I explained in problem two. Okay, this is solution number three. So here is what you need to do. Okay, so here are some things you can do for your struggling readers once you've determined that they're struggling. Provide scaffolds when you are expecting students to read independently. Students who struggle with reading are definitely going to struggle to read independently. And often you can identify the struggling readers because they struggle with independent reading. They don't get it done. Okay, so here are a bunch of things you can do to help them. So the first thing is always provide a short synopsis or a short summary of the text you're expecting them to read independently with definitions of any key vocabulary terms. give them background knowledge that they need in order to understand the text. And that might even be included in your summary or your synopsis of the text. Allow the students to read aloud in pairs. Read the most challenging parts of the text or the parts you're going to assess aloud to students who are struggling readers. Let student volunteers or students who are eager, let them read aloud to the class or to another student. But don't ever cold call struggling readers. That's really bad for their self-esteem, and just don't do it. Always debrief as a class and after expecting students to read independently, like debrief meaning talk about what you just read, what parts were confusing, what parts were interesting. Talk about it as a class so that those struggling readers are kind of getting kind of the gist of what everyone else read. Provide cliff notes to these students. It's really, really, really important for them. Allow students to listen to the audio versions when possible. Provide guided notes for students to track their own comprehension while they're reading, but don't grade it. Just use it as a support for them. And don't use reading logs unless some students find it particularly helpful. They're usually a waste of time. Okay, so those are just some of the scaffolds that you can provide struggling readers when you're expecting them to read independently. There are also, you know, a lot of others. So one that I'm thinking of is News ELA or News Ella. I don't ever remember which. there's text or common lit out there that you can change the Lexile level. And students don't need to know because leveled readers are definitely being put into question with the reading wars as well. So like labeling a student with a certain level is not helpful and actually can be very detrimental. But if you're providing students with that text and there's no, you know, like it doesn't say anything about the level that the text is, no one's going to know. Okay, so you have to be tactful about all of this. Number four, the fourth solution that I have to the problem of too much assessments and not enough remediation is allowing opportunities to retake tests and revise writing. Students should have ample time to struggle with the content, get feedback from the teacher, and have opportunities to learn from their mistakes, all before receiving a grade. But what do you do if only a portion of a class has the specific need of retaking a test or revising a piece of writing? Like, you know, not everyone, maybe, what do you do with the kids who all got A's, right? I recommend, there's a bunch of kids who got A's, I still recommend that you dedicate 1 to 2 weeks to retake a test or to revise a piece of writing. Students who did well the first time can always learn from the revision and retake process too. If it's a reading or vocabulary test, students who did well the first time or don't necessarily need to retake could also, if you choose, you know, let them like read a book of their choosing during that retake time. But I want to make an important note here. There can be a stigma and there can be peer shaming if this isn't handled in a thoughtful way. So here's how I go about handling retake week or revision week in a tactful, respectful, and kind way. I urge all students to retake a test or revise their writing. Here's what I say to students. I say that those who are retaking or those who want to revise, they may have already received an A. They may have received a B. They may have been absent. This information is all confidential. I explicitly state to my class that retaking and revising are excellent ways to grow, learn, practice, and most importantly, retain skills. I end by explaining how repeated practice is the way that you can retain that information in your brain long after you learned it. So even if a kid got an A, I don't care. Do you want to retain this information? Do you want to keep it in your brain for the rest of your life? Then retake the test, revise the writing. And anyways, writing can always be changed and revised. So even if you got an A, there's changes you can make to make it even better and more powerful, and just be creative and make it, you know, more interesting. This way, when I approach retaking and revising from this lens of like, hey, this is repeated practice and this is for your retention, this way, students who do choose to revise or retake are empowered, and no one knows. Like, if it's a retake week or retake day, I say some of these students received A's, but they want to retain this information, so they're doing it again, or they're just doing it again for fun, you know? So not everyone who's retaking or revising is someone who did poorly, quote unquote. Okay, let's wrap this episode up. Millions of students are struggling with reading for reasons outside of their control and detailed throughout this episode. Students with reading difficulties can't read well, and yet they're continually given assignments and tests that require them to read at or above grade level. Then these students are punished with low grades, D's and F's. It's a terrible situation for any student to be in. But there is hope for these students. If these struggling students are identified by a thoughtful teacher, and that teacher takes specific actions to ensure these students get the scaffolds and supports that they need, things can improve. Once a student starts to receive individualized support and opportunities to work with the teacher, they can begin to make up for the deficits they've accumulated over the years. Imagine if these struggling readers had a teacher in every grade aware of these issues that I talked about in this episode and doing what they can to provide individualized attention and support. These students could climb out of the reading deficit hole with the help of teachers at all levels, from elementary to middle to high school. It truly does take a community of dedicated teachers from all grade levels to make an impact of this magnitude. So tell me, are you one of those teachers? Which one of these solutions that I've proposed do you think you might be able to take on this year? And you know what? Just by listening to this episode, you're already part of the solution. And I appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening. Please share this with anyone you think needs to hear this information. Thank you so much, and I can't wait to hear from you. If you'd like to add a comment to this blog post, I would love to hear from you. What are you doing to ensure that students are learning to read in your classroom? And what are you changing? What are you changing this year about the way that you teach reading? I'd love to hear it. Thanks for listening.